Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, oh, hey, na, 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 hey, na, na, na.
Welcome, everyone, to Human Design on the Air. I'm your host, Peter Rowe of loveyourhumandesign.com, and today we are going to do an introduction to human design. We're going to take a step back from a lot of the shows that we've done in the recent past, where we've gone sort of very deep into different aspects of the human design system, and today we're really stepping it back and going to talk at a very high level about human design, what it is, the benefits that you can get by understanding your design or the design of people around you. And to help me do that, I'd like to introduce my co-host, the Reverend Rick of revrick.webs.com. Reverend Rick, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, everybody.
And as Reverend Rick and I were talking before the show, we're going to set down a challenge to each other. And, you know, human design is a system. It's a very deep, scientific, and methodical system. It has a lot of terminology and jargon. And Reverend Rick and I are challenging each other here on the show live to try to keep that terminology to a minimum during the show, replace some of that terminology with more layman terms or more common terms that if you're not, if you haven't been exposed to human design, it will still make sense to you. So that's our challenge for today, and feel free to call us out if you're on the chat board or you're listening and you want to call in. Our call in number is 347-426-3457. Again, that's 347-426-3457. And Reverend Rick and I would be more than happy to take calls. I know from my wife's experience, she got her human design chart and she looked at it and she saw the term investigating marker and she threw it away. So I know there are a lot of terms in there that are either challenging or can somewhat be shocking or frustrating. So we want to address those today if you have questions on any of that. But first, I guess let me just talk about the way I see human design. If you've contacted us, then Reverend Rick or myself or maybe somebody else in the industry, you've probably gotten your chart. And if you haven't gotten your chart, you can get a free chart from a lot of different sources. You can get it from my website, loveyourhumandesign.com, and over on the right-hand side, there's a button to click on, and you put in your birth information and your email address, and you'll get a chart with some free information. RevRick.webs.com. And Reverend Rick, where would they find your free chart?
They can do a couple of things. RevRick.webs.com, Rick is R-I-C, and then just click on the human design link or just mouse over it and it'll say free chart. If you click on the link for human design, it'll take you to my specific human design webpage, and in there you can go right to the contact us link under the about Rev Rick, and it'll have a form to fill out there, and you can get it that way too. So there's a couple of ways to do it.
And so after you do that, after you get this chart, you're going to get chart and some information. But really kind of the start of it is the chart. At least that's the visual piece. And if you have your chart, pull it out. It'll be a good guide to go along with the show. If you don't, you can go to loveyourhumandesign.com and click on the right-hand side, click on Peter's blog, and then look for the article, Introduction to Human Design. There's a chart there of the comedian actor Jim Carrey. And we'll talk a little bit more about his chart as we go along. I think we're going to go to his chart and use it as some examples of what we're talking about. But the first thing is that you get this chart. And really what human design is it gives you this graphic representation of what your wiring is. And it, essentially the wiring that you have is where you're going to have consistent energy, or you're going to more consistently behave in the areas that are represented in that chart. And we'll get into that in a minute, what those areas represent. And so in looking at your chart or that chart of Jim Carrey, you're going to see that places are colored in. There's some shapes that are colored in. There are lines or little half lines that are colored in. The attributes, the expressions that are related to those areas of the chart, that's where Jim Carrey is going to be consistent. He's going to consistently respond in a certain way regarding that. And the areas that are white, he's going to experience inconsistency or variability. That's actually kind of a new word that I came up with when I was writing this blog post. There's going to be a variance of experience with those types of energies that are represented by the white spaces or the white half lines or lines in Jim's life, or looking at your chart in your life where it's white, that experience will be variable, and where it's colored in, it's going to be more consistent. It's going to happen in a pattern, or more of a pattern, or more along a theme for those types of behaviors. And really, with trying to understand your design, or helping you to understand your design, what we're attempting to do is show you the consistencies, your tendencies, and show you where you're going to be inconsistent, or it's going to be more variable. And what that does is that allows you to understand your behavior and potentially choose to stick with those things you're more consistent at. I mean, a lot of us have come to choices in life about what we do for a living, maybe what we do for entertainment, because we've encountered the experience of these energies, and that we end up choosing to do something for a living or to do something as a hobby because we have this consistent energy or this consistent pattern behind it. And by helping you understand that and getting further definition around what those consistent expressions are, it can help us to better make choices in our lives. It can help us in understanding the others around us, understand why they behave the way they do or express themselves the way they do. And one of the key things is it can take out any personal feelings. We probably all have experience with somebody that has a lot of opinions or has advice for how to do something better in our lives, a mother, a father, mother-in-law, a sister or brother, or maybe even a child. And they're constantly saying, well, you know, if you just did it this way, or, you know, I do it this way. And by understanding that that's part of their design and why they're consistently bringing that up is not personal. It's just that that's who they are. That's their expression. And understanding that that's, you know, essentially that's no different than when you press a button on a computer and something happens. And, you know, with that person, whatever you're doing presses that opinion button, and boom, out comes the opinion. Well, I would do it this way. or, you know, you can do it this way in a more efficient manner, or whatever that is. But understanding that is just their expression of energy can take a lot of the personal feelings that can result in relationship. So, Reverend Rick, at this high level, what do you want to add? Where do you want to go with this?
Well, I would just kind of summarize, going back to what you said at the very, very beginning. It's the way somebody's wired, and I think it's really important what you just said a moment ago about understanding that if that's how someone's wired, that's how they're going to be responding to their environment and to the situations that they find themselves in. And it really isn't anything personal. And probably one of the best uses of human design is in two partners understanding each other better, or a parent and child understanding each other better. Because once we take the time to do that, once we take the time to understand each other, we really connect on a much deeper level, and we really learn how to communicate with each other. And of course, all relationships flourish when we take the time to communicate properly with each other. And I think that's one of the strengths that human design gives us. You know, we understand ourselves better, we understand the other person better, and we understand how we are meant to communicate with each other. And by communicate, I mean interact with each other and our environments, whatever that environment happens to be. So there's a great, great potential for improving all of our relationships through just that basic understanding. So it's a very powerful tool that I think, you know, everyone can benefit from. That's my little soap today.
That's your little soap?
That's my little soapbox for today.
And so I think with human design there's really three goals in my mind. One, if you understand human design about yourself, then, you know, really at a pretty detailed level, you can understand your strengths and weaknesses. And from that, you can position yourself in life better, because you could, you know, it just gives you another tool. And one aspect of that is it gives you, as you really start to understand your design, it gives you your authority or your decision making strength, the best way for you to make decisions. And authority, I guess. I would say if understanding your authority is probably a medium, deep thing. It's. I think for most people it would be hard to just, I've got my human design, now let me understand my authority. I think you need to understand more about your design before you can jump right there. I don't know. What do you think about that, Reverend Wright?
I honestly think it's important to... I think the most important thing, Peter, is to get a basic level understanding and then experiment with it. Play with it. Live it out and see what changes in your life, or if anything changes. Like we said, it's a very powerful tool, but only if it's applied. Only if you apply the knowledge. And in that sense, applying your guiding principles, you know, your authority, your decision-making authority, these are the energies that are specific to you in terms of how you can make the best decisions for yourself in whatever situation you find yourself in. But just as important as that is understanding who you are as far as your wiring goes. And by that I mean one of the different five categories that people can be grouped into. So experimenting with either one of those is great. Experimenting with both of them is even better. But it takes a little time to get used to all of that. So I wouldn't pressure anybody into feeling like they needed to know it all right up front. because it then it becomes work, you know. Live your life and enjoy it. And human design gives you that tool to be able to really deeply, thoroughly, you know, begin to enjoy it, because it opens up the doors and windows and curtains and exposes everything in a brand new light, in terms of this is how the energies in your world, in your life, in your body are supposed to flow smoothly, effortlessly, easily, so that you can truly enjoy everything. So as far as picking one thing over another as the most important thing to learn, I don't think, for me, that wouldn't make any sense. For somebody else, maybe. But for me, it's more pick up what you can from your first reading, play with it, then discuss it again. You know, and Peter, that's one of the reasons that you and I both, when we do readings, we record those readings and have them available for people so that they can go back and play it again and get more information and, you know, start working on the next aspect of their design that they want to work with.
And you make a really good point there, Reverend Rick, about playing with it. We're going to talk about the five types of human design and their high-level strategy. And we'll get into the different personality aspects of the what's called the profile. But it's important to take this information and remember, you know, really these designs are a snowflake. And actually a good point on this is the other day a client of mine requested a report for twins who were born 2 minutes apart. And she requested one for each of them. And I emailed her back and I said, well, I'm only going to charge you for one report, because for these twins there was really no change in the planets in between those 2 minutes. So they have the exact same design. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be exactly alike. You know, nor would somebody that was, you know, in the crib next to you in the hospital when you were born. And maybe they were born within a minute or two or three of your birth. Because this human design, it's a blueprint, sort of where you start from. But it's then up to us what we do with it, and up to us whether we live out that more consistent energy or we experiment in that more variable energy that I was talking about earlier. You know, even using that example of somebody that has opinions, people can form and express opinions in very different ways. Some can be subtle as a feather, and others can be hard as a sledgehammer. Now, that's all opinion-oriented information or oriented energy, but its expression can be very different. And so, as Reverend Rick was saying, you know, this information is designed to give you a guide that you can go play with and experiment with. You know, and I think we're really in agreement with a lot of people in human design and the founder Ra. It's like you're in a vehicle. In this life you're in a vehicle, and you know, you can enjoy the ride and play with it, or you know, or the other extreme, you can resent that you're trapped in the car. But there's a mechanism within human design that is it's called the magnetic monopole. You don't need to get hung up on that, but basically, it's a magnet. Each person has a magnetic force, and if you live within your design and you live out the energy that you were designed to live, it allows this magnetic force to operate the way it's designed to with the rest of the energy in the universe. And what that will happen is that will pull you or pull things to you. So you have the experiences that your design was set out to have. But you can choose to sort of go against that and explore that. And I think some of us are here to do that, is to go against that energy and see what it's like not to go with the flow. And some of us are here to make a decision and change that. And having experienced fighting that flow, come into recognition of your design, for example, to awaken to this greater blueprint underlying things, and allow the universal energy to pull you along into those things that are meant to happen for you.
So, Peter, as just for those people who either have gotten a chart and haven't really moved forward with it, or for people who are just beginning to learn about human design, can you break down the information that they would see in their chart into, let's just say, a few categories, just to kind of give them an overview of what kind of information can they expect to get from their chart when they actually have an overview reading?
There's different ways to break down the chart. The three most common things that are looked at in a standard reading are your high-level type. Based on your design, you fit into one of five high-level designations, and that's called type. And if you happen to be looking at that blog post, they're all listed there. Manifesting generator, projector, manifestor, or reflector. So there's the high-level type. There's a thing called the profile, which is your personality. And everybody gets essentially two aspects of profile. And again, that's listed on that blog post. We'll go into this, but just to give you an overview here. And then the third thing is the energetic design of your centers. And I think most readings will go into this some. They may not focus on all your centers because it's a lot of information, but they probably will at least focus on some of your energized or defined centers that are colored in. And they may focus on some of your undefined centers because each of them have significance. And the centers are an evolution from the Hindu chakra system. So if you saw the chart and you were thinking chakras, that's why, because there's this evolution from the seven chakra system to the nine center system in human design. So those are the three types of primary information that you'll get, and all of them will give you an idea of how you're designed to function. What is going to be a more common experience for you, and potentially some information about what's going to be a less common or by your design might not work quite as well as another way. What can you add to that, Rick?
Well, and I was just going to emphasize that, as you said, Peter, even just those elements are still just scratching the surface of a person's design. There's so much detail and so many layers that you can get into that it's just impossible to do in a very short period of time or in just one reading. And that's why, you know, when we talk about this, we tell people, you know, start with this foundation and play with it, experiment with it, live it. And once you get more familiar with it, then come back and see what more information we can delve into. But as in the situation with the twins that you mentioned earlier, even though their charts on the surface will appear the same, there are so many different detailed areas that we can get into that the charts would appear to be the same on the surface, but as that energetic configuration gets expressed in the lives of these kids, of these children, they'll more than likely express themselves in different ways, and that's the beauty of human design. It really gives you a framework that not only explains how and why you've done things in the past, it helps you understand how and why you're going to do things in the future. Not that it's a fortune-telling tool or anything like that. It's not. It just helps explain how we behave and why we behave the ways that we do.
And
as you said, Peter, you can't get it all from just the one reading. There's just way too much information in there, and we don't want to make anybody's heads explode now, do we?
No, we don't. But you hit on the word that I was thinking of, framework. You know, it really gives you a reading. Really gives you a framework that you can build upon, and the system is very deep, but very quickly, using that framework, you can start to play with it and get some real, real serious benefits out of it.
And Peter, you just made me think of something when you said, very quickly you can start to play with it. And I would want to emphasize that, you're absolutely right about that. This does not require any expertise in anything to be able to utilize the information that is contained in a person's chart. You don't have to know about the chakras. You don't have to know about the I Ching. You don't have to know about astrology. You don't have to know anything about any of the esoteric foundations of human design or the scientific foundations of human design. You don't need to be an expert in quantum physics or anything like that. The chart is a tool that is available to anyone and everyone, and the information contained in that chart is easily understandable by anyone and everyone, regardless of your background.
And so if we go out to the we've been talking really high level here, so let's get specific for a minute, and we'll get specific, and then we'll probably back up again to a little high level. But just to give something concrete to talk about. So if you go out to loveyourhumandesign.com and click on the right-hand side, Peter's blog, and then click on the article titled Introduction to Human Design, and there's a chart for Jim Carrey there, and you can click on that and make that larger. It's pretty small there, but I wanted to fit in their article there. And so when we're looking at Jim Carrey's chart, you will see the actual graph, or the body graph, as it's called. You will see that he has two defined centers here, and he has seven open centers. So anybody that has a chart like this that has a lot of openness or undefined areas, because seven out of nine are open or undefined, this is a person that's going to be heavily influenced by the energy around them. And because this openness can take in and feel that energy, can take in and amplify that energy, can take in and mutate that energy around them. But if we want to look at something very specific, if you look on Jim Carrey's chart and you see that he has the will, he does not have the will center, but you see that word will, and it's pointing to that triangle. And just underneath that triangle, if you can see it, well, in the triangle is the number 40, which stands for the gate 40 of the I Ching. And that line is colored in two different colors, which means that Jim Carrey has this energy in gate 40 twice. So it's going to be a strong influence in his life. And this energy is about being alone. And it's being alone versus being part of a family. That whole entire line is about family, community, and the tribe. And so if Jim had this entire line colored in, he would probably be driven in his life to always be a part of the family, or always be a part of a group, or always be a part of a community. And he would, because he would have that energy going, he would be reluctant to necessarily break away from that particular family or group or community. But that's not the case with Jim's design. He just has the aloneness, or the oneness, that when they come into group or community, they have to give up something. You know, to be a part of a family, you have to give up certain freedoms. There's certain rules. And, you know, so if you're going to abide by the family rules, then you're essentially giving up that you can't do what that rule prevents you from doing. Well, because of Jim's design and having this energy in this oneness or aloneness, his natural tendency is going to be that he'll choose being alone versus being with a family or group that is highly restrictive of his freedoms. This is not, somebody with this energy is not somebody you would typically expect to join a very rigid religious organization, for example. Because unless their defined values fit that restrictions of that organization very well, this energy would fight against it. This energy would fight to be alone and have the personal freedom as opposed to being part of that group. So here we've gone, sort of taken the deep dive, and we've gone very specific into one particular aspect of Jim Carrey's chart and how that would likely be expressed. Anything you want to add to that, Ricardo?
Not necessarily to that one particular aspect. I wouldn't mind talking about another one, though.
Please do.
If we look at that chart and we look at the center, you know which one I'm going to talk about, right? The identity.
Yeah.
That little diamond in the center with the arrow coming off from the left, it says G/identity. That's an energy center that carries the energy of who we are and where we're going. It's the energy of love and direction, which is all about our unique selves, who we are and where we're going. Can we love others? Can we love ourselves? And do we know where we want to get to? It doesn't necessarily mean we know how we're going to get there. It's just an energy of finding a direction and going in it. When it's white like this, and as it is in Jim Carrey's chart, it's an energy that is variable, as Peter said earlier. If it's colored in your chart, it'll be colored in yellow, and that means it's a very fixed energy. You have a very fixed idea of who you are and where you're going in life. That doesn't mean that you, every second of your life, you know which direction you're going in. There are just decisions to be made, and there are, you know, forks in the road. So you'll be faced with times where you have to choose which direction to go in. But a fixed energy means that you'll have a fixed way of choosing that direction. You'll have a reliable, consistent way of going about and finding that direction. When it's an undefined energy like this, and by undefined we mean it's colored, it's not colored in, it just appears white on the chart. It's variable. It's an energy that the expression of who he is and what he's doing with his life changes according to his environment. And what I like to say, and in Jim Carrey's case, it's very applicable. What I like to say is, people with this kind of configuration, you know, the variable identity energy, are people who can if they choose to be, they can almost be a personal chameleon. They can just about mimic the people they're around. In the case of Jim Carrey, he's got what seems to be thousands of different personalities. But of course, as an actor, he needs to tap into that energy. He needs to be able to become the character that he's portraying. And for him, it's very easy to do that. And especially with this kind of energy center being so variable, so malleable. So in that sense, you know, it can, tying it into the energy that Peter was just talking about, he can feel like he's a part of a group, or he can feel like he's not a part of the group, depending on what kind of energies he's around, because he'll take those energies in and make himself, he'll create an identity for himself based on those energies around him. And that's one of the that's one of the natures of these variable energy centers, the ones that are not colored in. You know, we take in that kind of energy, and we adapt to it based on our surroundings, on who's around us and what's going on. So in that sense, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that he is a multiple personality, but he can easily become the character that he's portraying. And you know, that can be a reality for him. So Peter, you wanna add anything else to that?
Well, I'd just say that so he has this malleable identity, but if you look on the top of that triangle, he's got some colored in lines there. And I want you to look at particular the line 7, or the gate 7 there, which is to the left, black line, and the gate 1 on the top. And the two characteristics that come out of those gates are leadership and out of gate 7 and a self-expression out of gate 1, having its own flavor, having your own flavor. And so as Ricardo was saying, he's kind of a chameleon, but the things that he morph into, or the personalities that he morphs into, tend to still have these qualities that they, you know, if you think about some of the movies like Bruce Almighty, Liar Liar, The Mask, he morphs into these other personalities, but they always kind of have this leadership aspect. They kind of steal the show, in a way, with whoever he's acting with. And, you know, and they always have this real personal flair to them. So even though his identity is malleable, they're underlying that are these consistent qualities that come up within the personalities that he morphs into. And so here, that's a really good example of you have this variable design about the identity, but there are these two core consistencies that come out.
And Peter, you just to illustrate how we talked about that there's so many different layers and so many different potential details that we can get into with any of this. I don't want to complicate things. I just want to mention, even within those two gates, that self-expression and that leadership quality, you know, let's just take the self-expression. There's a potential there in that self-expression to truly, truly, truly just not even care what anybody else says, thinks, or does. It's just, this is the way I'm going to express myself, and I'm just going to do it. You know, it doesn't matter if it offends anyone else or not. I'm going to express myself this way, and if you can't handle it, tough. Or it can have the same, it can have the opposite kind of expression where, you know, his self-expression could be very influenced by, you know, some form of conditioning factor, you know, whether it be siblings or parents or, you know, people close to him or something like that. The way he expresses himself could be very, very influenced by that. So either way, you know, depending on what else is going on, and we've said many, many times, we can't really look at just one aspect of a chart and you know, and give an accurate reading to anyone. You've got to look at the whole thing in combination. But again, that's just an example of how you can really delve into some really deep details in terms of what are some of the conditioning factors that would influence this kind of behavior, and what kind of behavior can you expect. But the one thing that's true for him is his kind, no matter which influence is dominant in his expression, that expression is going to be foundational to who he is. You know, it's going to be, regardless of how he chooses to show himself, he's going to be showing his true self, even though he may have many different aspects and choose one aspect over another in certain situations. But it will definitely be a foundational element of his identity. You know, Peter, it's a little more difficult doing this without using the jargon, isn't it?
It is. It's a little more of a challenge, but hopefully our audience is benefiting from that. So
it's let's take a little game.
Yeah. So let's take a little step back, and sort of stepping, we sort of went into the detail here of Jim Carrey to point out, you know, how specifically you can understand different aspects. Now we're going to take a little bit step back and just talk about those two things that we said are sort of two categorizations. These are more high level. And the first one we're going to talk about is the type. The human designs can be broken down into five types. Some people say four types. And from those types, you can have a general strategy. And again, really, I think the whole goal of the type thing is to give you a starting place on where you can start your experiment. And so each of the types are given a high-level strategy. The manifesting generators are given... giving the strategy. Manifesting generators have energy that I'm at a loss for words because I was going to fall back into the jargon. I'm trying to avoid that. Manifesting generators have energy to respond and respond quickly, and so because of that, their strategy is to respond, reprocess, inform, and act. It's a combination of those energies. And essentially, manifesting generators are here to be very, very responsive to the environment around them. And sometimes they may be responding so quickly to things around them that it may look more like they're actually trying to manifest. They're trying to be the first spark. They're trying to be the creation of that activity. But if you look very closely, most of the time there's been an initial event that's caused them to respond. And so again, this is for manifesting generators, this is a high-level strategy. For some manifesting generators, they may be better off being more, if there's a spectrum between acting and responding, being the initiating action or being an action completely out of response, some manifesting generators may be more up at the end of the initiating spectrum. Other manifesting generators may be more down at the just purely responding end of the spectrum. And it depends on your design and the intricacies of your design, which is going to work better for you. And this is where we get into the play with it. Because you will find very quickly, if you're trying to initiate all the time and it's just not working, that if you adjust your model and start operating more out of a response, that's going to work better for you. Or vice versa.
Yep.
So, Ricardo, you want to take the generator?
Sure. The generator is, the chart we've just been looking at, Jim Carrey's chart, is the chart of a generator. And this is how simple to understand human design can be for anybody and everybody. As we look at Jim Carrey's chart, we see that he has a red square down towards the bottom of the diagram, a square colored in red in his chart. And anybody who is completely brand new to human design, has never heard of it before, doesn't know anything about it, in less than 30 seconds, they can go through 100 different charts and pick out every single one of the generators. And the reason for that is generators are the only ones that have that little red square. They're the only ones that have that consistent, reliable, motorized energy in their charts. So what does that mean? That means that they are literally designed to respond to their environments. Their entire energetic being is looking for something to respond to. The nice thing about it is they can respond to anything. You know, a response could be as simple as walking down the aisle in a grocery store and looking at a box of chocolate fudge cookies and saying, ooh, do I want those? And that response could be one of, yep, you got it. Go ahead. Yep, we want it. And then and again, another response could simply be, well, it's not on my list. Should I get it? And that energy can turn around and say, don't do it. Don't get it. And both of those responses are correct because the generator is here to respond. And what are they responding to? Well, the first time it was a question of, ooh, do I want those? That's one kind of question to respond to. Should I get them is another type of question to respond to. And the beauty of this responsive energy is there is no such thing as, I'm going to put it this way, there is no such thing as awareness in that response. There's no such thing as truth or deceit. There's no such thing as lies. There's no such thing as misconception. There's only the response. And it's always a response in the moment, you know, in the instant. And it's always true. It's always accurate. I shouldn't say true. It's always accurate. The sacral center, that little red square, it's designed to respond instantaneously without regard to right or wrong or truth or lie or anything like that. You just give it something to respond to, and many times it's, you can force a response by asking yes or no questions. That's one way that you can train yourself to get in touch with your sacral center, your sacral response, if you happen to be a generator. You can have somebody ask you yes or no questions. You can ask yourself yes or no questions. But generally, it's an energy that just gives you some form of gut reaction, pro or con, towards whatever it is that's in front of you, towards whatever it is that appears in your reality. And that energy is something you can rely on. If you've got that little square colored in red in your chart, then you can rely on that consistent gut reaction type of expression. And I'll stop there. Peter, you want to add something to that?
Well, I like the analogy that you gave because, you know, so Rick's analogy was, you know, you're in the store and you've got the fudge cookies. You know, but there's thousands and thousands of products in that store. And so, you know, there's all those to respond to. And so you can come back with $1,000 worth of groceries if you're sort of basically responding to everything. And so likewise, you could put that in other aspects of your life. You're going to have opportunities to respond to from coworkers, from the neighbors, from your siblings, from your parents. Not all of those are right for you to respond to, or not all of those are right for you to respond yes to, or you're going to end up with $1,000 worth of groceries, or in this case, way more things than you can possibly do. And so what Reverend Rick was getting at is, if you start to listen to that voice in your gut as a generator, you're going to end up saying yes to those things that are right for you and declining those things that aren't right for you. And that works in the grocery store versus the, you know, everyday life situation.
Yep.
The next type is the projector, and since he is one, I'm going to invite Reverend Rick to see if he wants to talk about the projector.
Actually, since you had me talk about generators and you're a generator, I'm going to ask you to talk about the projectors. We're going to switch today.
All right. All right. And so what I was doing is, because Reverend Rick is a projector, things are going to work better for him when he's invited. And so you saw right there in that example, I gave him the opportunity through my invitation to speak about projectors. But
I obviously hated that. Sorry to interrupt there, Peter. I appreciated the invitation very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so he had that opportunity to the invitation. And really the key for projectors, there's two keys, I would say. One is, if you wait for the invitation, you're responding to that invitation is going to be more productive. The opportunities that you get when you're invited are going to flow in a more harmonious way and possibly to bigger and better things than if you see something going on in the world and you try to force yourself in there. And the second aspect of that invitation, or second key, is figuring out if that's the right invitation for you. But step one is to wait for the invitation, because when you do, it's going to be a more powerful experience. Step two is, you know, is that the right invitation for you? So again, these are high-level strategies, and you'll find by playing with them that you may need to tweak it. There may be, for example, there may be some sources close in your life that as a projector, you have an open invitation. You know, so maybe somebody in your family or somebody that's close to you, or maybe at work, you might be in a position where really, because, for example, you're a manager, you know, you've been invited to do things. And you don't have to have that, you know, Ricardo, can you tell your staff what to do? You don't need that, the literal invitation, because you've already got one that's sort of built in. But there may
that's
be
right.
other aspects.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's kind of the implicit invitation. You know, before going into the seminary, before getting involved in human design, I was a technical trainer. And so I was basically teaching people how to use certain software. And I did that from the front of the room, and I was the one guiding and directing everyone else. But I did not need to get their individual permission to do that. By the fact that they registered for the class, they gave me that invitation to guide them through the exercises. And that's a very simplified example of, you know, a projector getting an implicit invitation, but it works. you know, it's a very simple example, and things in life don't need to be complicated. So I use that a lot. You know, you don't need to always be invited. If you're in a group of people having a conversation, and you're there at the beginning of the conversation, you don't need to wait for somebody to acknowledge you. You're a part of that conversation. There's an implicit invitation to speak and to contribute to that conversation. But if you walk up to an already going on conversation, it's not only polite to wait for somebody to give you some kind of head nod or eye contact recognition or something. It's also appropriate as a projector, if you are a projector, to wait for that kind of recognition before you interject into that conversation. Same kind of thing. You know, it's an implicit invitation. You don't have to wait for the actual words, "I invite you to," which is interesting. A lot of people think they have to wait for that. But I'll shut up there, Peter. You can go ahead.
No, that's all good. That's all good. So that's the projector. Next, we have the manifester, which everybody thinks they want to be, but it's not because of the word manifesting. But it's not always easy to be a manifester. Manifestors have energy to the throat center. You know, so if you're looking at a chart, it's right there in the neck. And the throat center is really where all expression comes into being. So we're not just, it is in the throat, so you may be thinking words, but expression is not just words. It's actions. It's painting. It's the way somebody dresses. It's the way somebody's body language. It's expression. And so manifestors have this energy to the throat, and it comes from one of the motor centers. So it's motorized energy. It's got power behind it. And what that means is that they're really here to be the initiators in life. They're here to be the spark. They're here to get things started, but not necessarily to finish them. And so the key strategy for the manifestors, they just need to make sure they inform who or whom is impacted by their actions. Because if they're sparking something, if they're initiating something, there's probably somebody that's going to be impacted. And they need to make sure that they're informed so that they can potentially come along for the manifestation, so potentially they can help in the actual manifestation. Because as I said, manifestors have this spark energy, but it's not in terms of bigger things. It's not necessarily the energy that's going to carry it forward to completion or to grow it to the size of what the intended to grow it to the size that is intended by the initial spark. Reverend Rick?
I would just add that informing strategy actually goes both ways. If somebody's going to do something that impacts a manifestor and they don't let that manifestor know, there's a lot of resistance that comes up in that manifestor. You know, and so for the manifestor, it's both directions. And truly, you know, I mentioned before with the projector about, you know, politeness. Truly, it's just polite to let somebody know if you're going to do something that impacts them. So it's a good rule of thumb to follow no matter what, but it's a very important rule of thumb to follow if you're a manifestor. And again, in human design, as Peter said, manifestors aren't necessarily the ones that bring things forth into form. Manifestors are the ones that create that spark. They start things. They initiate it. And we're all of these categories of individuals are designed to work together. And Peter, I'm guessing that you're going to kind of bring them bring them all together. I'm giving you something to respond here to. Peter, I'm going to say that you'll be very good at bringing things together when we finish discussing the five types, right?
I will try. But I really like your point about the informing the manifestor. I have a brother-in-law, and he has a dog that he's had for several years, and she's staying here now with us because he can't have her where he's living. But he will come up and walk her on the weekends or every other weekend. And on several occasions, he's come up to walk her, and we haven't been home. And when we do catch up with him, he'll say, well, nobody informed me that you guys were going to be out or away. And it's such a manifestor comment to make.
Yep.
You know, from our side of things, it's like, why did we need to inform you that, you know, we had to run out and do errands on a Saturday? But that's how the manifestor feels. It's like, well, if I have to inform, then somebody needs to inform me.
Yep, absolutely.
And, I think that works. You know, works across all types. That if you're gonna be doing something, if you're gonna be guiding and leading a projector, you're gonna want to be invited. And it's going to work better that way anyway.
And Peter, you bring up a good point, and that is the stuff that we're talking about here is really the nature of each individual type, but that's part of learning to understand both yourself and others, because when you know that nature and you know which category you fit into, you know how best how people should relate to you best and how you should relate to others best. And that begins that whole journey of exploration, like we said before, you know, go out and experiment with the information and see how it all fits together.
Exactly. So the last type is the reflector. Reverend Rick, would you like to cover the reflector?
Sure. Reflectors are mirrors. There you go, I'm done. So, no. reflectors are known as reflectors because that really is what they do. And using Jim Carrey's chart, again, as an example, we see he has two energy centers that are colored in, and all the rest are non-colored in or just white. In a reflector chart, even the two that Jim Carrey has would be non-colored in or white. So reflectors have a very unique chart in that they have no consistent, reliable energy in their energy centers. All nine energy centers appear white on their chart. And what that really means is that they are literally the barometers for their environment. One of the examples I like to use is if you have a reflector on a team at work and that person is not happy when they get together for team meetings and things like that, they're not, they just don't feel good about being on that team. What that generally would mean is there are some dynamics in that team that need to be addressed, energetic dynamics that just are not flowing smoothly. Maybe people aren't following their strategies. Maybe their personalities just don't work real well. But whatever the thing is, whatever the reason is, a reflector reflects the energy around them. And so if they're not happy, it's time to look at the environment they're in and say, what needs to be changed in order to correct this, you know, this environment? By the same token, if this person just can't wait to get home and be in the community that he or she is in, and, you know, if he's got a dog, you know, go out in the neighborhood and walk the dog, you know, say hi to the neighbors, just absolutely loves, you know, where he lives, you know, that's a pretty clear indication that that's a really nice community to be in. The energetic dynamics are flowing smoothly, in other words. And so reflectors are very, very, they may be a very, very small part of the population, but they're a very, very important important part of the population, because they truly do reflect or become the barometers of the interactions in the environment. They're the ones that let us know beyond a shadow of a doubt exactly how things are in that environment, whatever that environment happens to be, whether it's work or community or church or, you know, whatever. So, Peter, you want to add to that?
No, I think I'll leave it there. I think that's a great definition. And so all of these, as Ricardo said, all these types work together. We have the manifester that creates the initial energy, creates the spark. We have the manifesting generator that can come along and amplify that spark and add generator energy, generator energy is the really doing, churning out lots of work, you know, whatever that work is. We have the generators that can come along and respond to that, you know, whatever was initiated, and help participate in the doing. The projectors can get involved to lead and manage and guide the whole process. And the reflectors come in as part of that to give us a snapshot of what's wrong, what's right, potentially help identify changes that need to be made, and participate in their own right. But all the types work together, and there's a very, what I think is a law of the universe that the percentages of these seem to balance what we need. About 70% of the population are manifesting generators or generators. So 70% of us are here to do. There's about 20%, 21% are projectors to guide and lead. So basically one out of every five people is designed to guide, lead, manage. And a little bit over 10% are here to be that creative spark. So 1 in 10 are here to spark things. And then lastly, about 1% of the population are here to give us a reflection, give us a check on how are we doing, you know, within our groups, our communities, our families. So that's the types. That's the five types, and that's one of the keys. And you know, we've given you the strategy that you can play with if you're one of those five types. The other key aspect, and the last thing we'll be covering today, is called the profile. And the profile is really it's an indication of personality, or it's an indication of the direction that your personality is going to tend to take. There are six potential profile lines, they're called lines, in the human design system. And everybody gets a combination of two of these lines. Now, if you have your chart, or you're looking at Jim Carrey's chart that we've been looking at, you can see in the keynotes the profile section, and then it has two numbers. And in Jim's case, it's a 1 and a 3. What we're going to do here is we'll just go through the six lines, and you can assemble the two aspects that apply to you. And we'll start with the first line, which happens to be one of Jim Carrey's. The first line is an investigator, or investigating. The thing about the personality of somebody that has a first line is they're going to be driven to find out detail about things that affect them, whether that's a television that they're researching to buy, or a school that they may be applying to, or trying to understand a friendship with another person. They're going to be driven to find out or investigate, or even just sort of turn over in their mind the different aspects until they come to foundation and feel that they have enough foundational information to basically let that investigation rest. and First Line will do this, you know, on anything that affects them. Reverend Rick, anything on the First Line?
No. I think that was good.
Okay, how about the Second Line?
Second Line. Second Lines are interesting. Second Line people are, shall I use the terminology?
Hermits?
Yeah. Second Line people are called hermits, but they really aren't. Second Line people are people who sometimes they need a little bit more time to process things. And so fairly regularly they take time. You know, they get quiet, or you know, maybe they choose not to go out on a Friday night with friends. You know, and many times other people don't necessarily understand this and think, well, what's wrong with you? What's wrong? And there's nothing wrong. A second line profile is quite simply someone who needs to sit with his or her own thoughts and experiences to really process things out and gain a good, solid understanding of whatever it is that they need to incorporate into their being. When they've taken the time to do that, then the nature of this energy, this is a projected energy, as Peter was saying earlier about some other lines, some other energies, it's a projected energy that when this person has taken the time to really sit down and process things, other people are there to drag you out of being, you know, being in your quiet time or in your alone space, or what I like to say is retreating into the cave. You know, other people will come by to take you out of that cave, or in some cases drag you out of that cave. But one of the things that I like to say is, you know, when you've processed something, then it's ready to be shared. And so other people are going to be drawn to you to pull you out of that cave so that you can share what it is that you've processed. And even though what you're processing is more for yourself, other people can still benefit from it depending on what else you have in your energetic configuration. You know, it may be that you need to process something and then share it with the greater collective, or maybe it's just that you need to process something so that you can present it to your family or your small group that you live with or experience life with. Either way, but it's a give and take kind of energy. It's an energy that pushes you into your cave to process and then allows for something to pull you back out when you're done processing. That sound okay, Peter?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so then we have the third line. Again, this is another aspect of Jim Carrey's here at the chart that we've been looking at off and on. In the third line, it's called a martyr. But really, it's about experience and experiment. And basically, the third line learns through life. And if you happen to be a third line, you may say, well, doesn't everybody do that? And I guess to some extent we all do, but really not the way a third line does it. The third line is, you know, that's how they have to learn. They have to be part of the experiment. They have to be part of the experience. They're called a martyr because they get things wrong. Or they, you know, it appears when things don't go right, they're throwing themselves on the sword for the rest of us so we can sort of take the lesson learned and not have to fall on the sword. But the truth is that third lines have never had a failure in their life. They're designed to learn from that experience, and that's really what they need to bring about wisdom. Wisdom for themselves and wisdom that can be shared with others. And so if you're a third line person, one, right off the bat, you can, if you've ever sort of acquired that label of failure, either from yourself or your parents or people around you, because something hasn't gone quite right, you can throw that label away, because that's not really true. It's just that that's the process you've had to go through to learn the better way. Reverend Rick?
I would just add to that that these three lines, these three types of energy that we've just talked about, are really more so what I refer to as the inner environment. They I guess are more affectual and basically affect your inner environment, everything inside your skin. The other lines that we're going to talk about are more for the outside of your skin type of environment, you know, your outward relationships. You know, this is human design is all about your relationship to yourself as well as your relationship to others. And these three lines that we've just talked about are more concerned with your relationship to yourself. But that being said, Peter, this third line energy that you were just talking about has an inkling, even though it's an inner environment type of energy, it has an inkling that there's an energy outside of itself. There's something going on outside of the skin. And it keeps wanting to take a peek and kind of see what's out there. And so, you know, there's that little nudge there that says, well, let me go and just peek or see what I can find out or what can I experience that can shed some light on what's out there. And basically that brings us to the fourth line, which is just like the first line is foundational to your relationship to yourself, you know, your inner environment. The fourth line is a foundational type of energy that's outside of yourself. So in other words, this is now reaching outside of the skin, reaching to that outer environment, and it's the energy is, they call it the opportunist, because it's an energy that reaches out and creates all kinds of contacts. Fourth line energy is an energy that says, I want to meet as many people as I can. I want to go out and have fun. You know, I want to, you know, where's the party? Let's you know, start socializing. And the reason it's referred to as the opportunist is because through all these myriad contacts that are made, there's all kinds of opportunities that lie in, you know, in the making of these contacts. So the foundation, I guess, is the key relationships that are needed to have a stable and outer environment. So in that sense, Peter, what would you say? Like family, friends, close relations, those kinds of things would be foundational to a stable outer environment. What else can you think of to add to that?
Well, locational things, home, job, those aspects about the environment. My son, who's a senior in high school and will be graduating in 2 months, you know, he's a fourth line, and he's going through a fair amount of turmoil. There's a lot of his foundation that's changing. You know, he's now at the point, he's gotten into college, and he knows where he's going to go. But he's not going to be with, I don't think any of his friends are going to the college that he's going to. He has a girlfriend, and they've, at this moment anyway, have decided that they're not going to continue their relationship in college, at least to start off with. You know, so there's, for him, there's a huge foundational change. He'll be moving from our house to a college dorm, and you know, without the friends. So a lot of fourth line changes there, and I think that's pretty common. That if you have a fourth line and you're going through a major change in your life that's affecting one or multiple of those, that it can kind of undo you, because you know, that foundation, I really see them sort of as like anchors. And if we pull up one anchor point, that's not so bad. But if you start to pull up two or three or four, you can really sort of feel adrift and it be unsettling as a fourth line person.
Yeah, that would be a very destabilizing kind of impact.
You know, so again, strategy here is, you know, this is one of the beautiful things about human design. If you understand that, then what can you do for strategy? Well, one example for our son is we're going to go up and visit the college. He hasn't actually visited this college. So he can start to build some of that foundation. He can see a dorm room that, you know, that might be his or is just like his. He can see where he's going to be taking classes. So he can start to fill in the new foundation to help stabilize that uneasy feeling. And so next up is the fifth line. And the fifth line is, again, it's a projected energy line. People that have a fifth line personality, I'd say especially when the number comes first. So for example, the chart we've been looking at, Jim Carrey, is a 1-3, the 1 coming first. But people that have a fifth line that comes first, they tend to have a magnetism to them that people are just naturally attracted to this energy. They're drawn to this energy. It's a projected energy, and it's a sophisticated energy. If you have a fifth line in your chart, you've probably experienced a situation where somebody has misjudged you or sort of categorized you or pigeonholed you into something that you really don't feel represents you. The reason is this fifth line energy is sophisticated, and it has the knowledge or the ability to express itself in any number of ways, but it tends to choose the best way to express itself in that moment. And by choosing one out of a variety of ways of responding, it's possible to sort of get typecast from that one experience. And so because of this, the fifth line is somewhat elusive. People that are fifth lines are a little bit harder to get to know at first. But once you get to know them, there's a level of depth that's probably deeper than people that don't have a fifth line. Reverend Rick, you want to add to that?
I'll just add that there's another little aspect to that fifth line energy, and that is these are people who are looked at, as you said, it's a projected energy. These are people who are looked at as having a leadership potential because they can quickly and easily pick an action. You know, they can decide very, very quickly and accurately what to do in a certain situation, and so others see them as potential leaders. But as you said, Peter, it's hard to get to know them because that fifth line energy notices the nuances in each new situation, even if it appears very similar to a previous situation. And so that leadership potential that's seen in the first time around can sometimes be undermined the second time around because many other people won't see the nuances of the situation and won't understand the reason for a different behavior or a different course of action chosen. And so there's at once a very alluring energy, but then there's also that reaction of, well, you're not who I thought you were at all, kind of thing. So the advice that I would give in for anyone who's a fifth line personality is quite simply, you know, don't take it personally if other people think that you're someone totally different from who they expected. Just let them know, hey, there are many facets to me. You know, I'm a diamond with a million sides. It takes time to get to know me. Stick around. You may like what you see. You know, and if not, that's okay. But know that I'm more than the persona that you create from just one or two meetings of me.
And lastly, we have the sixth line. Reverend Rick, you want to handle the sixth line?
The sixth line. Wow, six lines are interesting people. Six lines are the kind of, they get to experience three different stages in life that take them through an incredible journey. And the first part of that journey is very much like the third line profile that we talked about before. You know, that experiential or experimental type of energy where you just got to get in there, get your hands dirty, experience life, experience everything, you know, try everything. Most of the time, we'll be faced with a lot of things that don't quite work the way we want them to. And that's okay, because we as people tend to learn more from our mistakes than we do from doing things right the first time anyway. Maybe I should say the first time and every time. So there's a lot of that experiential or experimental energy that's devoted to learning what doesn't work. But it's all done on a first-hand basis. Then, once we move out of that first-hand or first-person experiential kind of energy, the sixth-line person moves into a vicarious type of experiential nature, where they essentially they learn by watching others, and this is an energy that it adds to what they've learned in the first part of their life. So the first part is firsthand experience. The second part of their second stage of life is the secondhand experience, if you will, and together those energies create a basis for wisdom. You know, these two types of experiences come together to create a life wisdom or life experience wisdom that in the third stage of life becomes known as the role model. So the sixth line energy is the energy of the role model. These are people who are recognized for their life experience wisdom because they've been able to gather it all their lives up to that point. And now people are coming to them and asking them to share that wisdom. But just as there needs to be a give and take in most things, this is an energy that if it's appropriate for the person to share his or her wisdom, then they'll say yes. If it's not appropriate, then they'll say no, and they should celebrate that no. And how do you know if it's appropriate or not? Well, there's got to be an exchange. There's got to be something that comes back to the sixth line person. Whatever it happens to be, you know, it's not being selfish. It's, you know, understanding that everything in life is balanced. So for whatever the role model can give, the role model needs to also receive. So, does that sound okay, Peter? Have I missed something? You're a sixth line, right?
I am. No, I think
What can you fill in there for us?
I think that was good. I mean, I just summarize in that the first 28 years you have an inward focus. From 28 to 50 you have more of an outward aloof focus, and then after 50-51, called coming off the roof, you sort of step into this role model where you'll participate when it's worthy for you to participate. So those are the six types. Again, those are about personality under that. And, you know, and we covered, those are the six profile lines, I should say. We covered the five types. Before that, we kind of covered the energetic aspects of the chart. So we hope that this has given you an overview of human design. We'd highly recommend that you get a personal reading from myself, from Reverend Rick, or from somebody that you find that matches your style. Rick, any closing words here in the last few seconds?
Nope, that's good.
All right, well, join us next week for Human Design on the Air, Thursdays at 1. Also next Tuesday at 1, we have the Spiritual Help Desk, where we'll be talking to an energy shifter and doing a little live work on the air. Thanks for being here, and have a great weekend.
Goodbye, everybody.